flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You have me, Kevin Hagland, the Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick, and of course, the famouser Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. How we doing today?
I made the perfect eggs this morning, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Scrambled?
It was scrambled. Usually I do like a fried egg, and I do three. And today I just did 2 scrambled eggs, and I was kind of disappointed I didn't do 3.
Okay, well, I have a question. When you fry your egg, do you flip it over, or do you just fry the one side in event?
I do it in butter. And I flip it over.
You flip it over.
About,
yeah.
I don't even know.
I
just
like
go
flipping
on.
It over for like and give it 10 seconds so you don't so all the white is cooked.
Yep. And but I have a little
but
bit
I need
of yolk.
I need the yolk. Yeah. I need the runny yellow.
So I'm kind of disappointed in myself for not having a third egg because they were so good.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna try again tomorrow.
Do you think? I mean, because chasing that high, I know you're talking about an egg. But chasing that high is what people pretty much live life by, right?
I feel like
I could have just gotten that one more egg or that one more this or that one more that.
I feel like I can. I feel like that's okay because I kind of eat eggs every morning and I don't know. I know the price is going up on them. I know that's happening
really?
Right now. Yeah.
Oh, so we're losing chickens.
Kids, don't egg my house again. All right. So that's the I know that's happening, but I'm going to chase it every morning. I'm going to try to get that.
Eggs are still cheap, though. Like, it's one of the cheapest proteins you can get.
You're right,
right
about that.
Yeah. If for some reason somebody egged your house, but, like, one of the eggs didn't explode, would you use it?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
I feel like, I don't know this. You were in the 4-H club, right, Alec? You, if I have eggs and it's been sitting out, it's been cold, and now it's sitting out, is it bad?
I don't think so.
All right, there you go. I'll trust Alec on this.
You want me to make you more jealous of David Murphy?
Oh, yes.
We talked about eggs yesterday with David Murphy.
Look at that.
I mean, who would have known? I had no clue you were going to talk about your eggs this morning. But David Murphy said he could eat a dozen eggs in the morning and still not be full. And
yet
he's still like thin and fit. And he's like, yeah, I can eat a dozen eggs in the morning and still be like, give me some pancakes or whatever because the eggs didn't fill me up. He loves eggs.
Jeez.
But he can eat a dozen eggs in the morning and still feel like, I can eat more.
Gentlemen, I got a good feeling because we're less than 3 minutes in and this show is already better than I thought it would be.
Oh, okay.
So I am excited about how this show has started. All right. The Rangers are making moves. Cowboys are making moves. And I feel like we should hit the Rangers first because there's a variety of things to get to. But and I want to talk about the event you got to do yesterday, Mike, however you're comfortable talking with. But The other thing I wanted to add, and you alluded to this even 2 days ago or whenever we talked about the Rangers Sports Network, Neil Liebman, who's the chairman of the Rangers Sports and Media and Entertainment, said there are going to be more deals. So essentially, he just boiled it down to there will be more cable and satellite agreements signed. And this kind of feels like in reaction to Fubo or a couple of different, or YouTube TV, a couple different places that are like, hey, what's the story? So Liebman came right out and was like, hey, there's more. Yes. It's just not done yet.
Right. I will say this, just listening to, not that they told me this, but listening to whether it's Jeff Wilson, Evan Grant, the people that cover the Rangers through writing, YouTube TV, I didn't know this, but they do not do regional sports network deals.
Yeah.
So this isn't, so I do have YouTube TV. From my understanding is, yes, whether it's Fubo, Hulu, I could get some of them wrong. I'm not saying I'm going to be right on these, that there's a likelihood that deals could get done with those people. But YouTube TV does not do regional sports.
Fascinating.
So I do have YouTube TV, but from what I understand, this isn't a Texas Ranger thing. You stupid Texas Rangers. You know how people get, I have this or that, and you guys aren't doing
it. You're their spokesperson. They take it out on you.
Yes. There's more to come with regular cable. There's more to come with streaming. But YouTube TV, from what I understand, and you can hear from whether it's Evan Grant reading his stuff, Jeff Wilson listening or reading his stuff, is that YouTube TV doesn't do this. So if you have YouTube TV and you think, well, this is the only way I can watch the Rangers, there's a zillion different ways, but YouTube TV does not do regional sports. That's just not part of their philosophy in giving you streaming entertainment.
Now, one of the things we talked about the other day is that you can still get all of the games broadcasted right here on 105.3 The Fan, which is still true. However, what is being added is the Ranger Sport Network, Sports Network, is going to carry a 30-minute pregame and postgame show hosted primarily by Jared Sandler. We'll get into it in just a minute that Elvis Andrus is going to do some of this stuff. And that's going to be simulcast on 105.3 The Fan. So essentially the top-notch pre- and postgame that you've been getting on The Fan is like more or less what they're going to be taking to the TV product. And that's the thing where Elvis Andrus is going to jump in and do 20-ish of those this year too.
That means you're going to have to hear me on the pre and post game show here on 105.3 The Fan.
Get to.
All right.
Well, so I think some get to. Others have to.
I think
I fall that way with you too sometimes.
I want to brag about this. I really do, because you saw the picture yesterday. Mike's doing color analyst again, and that was awesome last year. I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. And I don't know how much more you get to do or what. I'm not exactly sure about that yet, but I'm glad they're bringing you back for it. Because for this station, for our show, we got to talk about a lot of fun stuff with you. And I think our audience really enjoyed you being on there. So congratulations again for getting to rock that, man. Really looking forward to the season.
Me and Murph get to share the duties of calling the games. And I will have quite a bit. So I hope you like me. If not, I'm trying my best.
Okay, there you go.
And I will keep trying my best. I do know, I get it, right? Sometimes we can be critical of whether it's Tony Romo in a game or what, but I do know that it's a fun job.
Sure. Still a job.
I don't know. Yeah. I would say, I don't know at times when people are critical what they want or don't want.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And then you do have to understand a national game. Last night, the Mavericks were a regional game. So I believe Devin Harris was with Mark Folliwell, if I'm remembering the game right. And Skin wasn't doing the road game. They are employed by the Dallas Mavericks. I'm employed by the Texas Rangers for those games. AJ Pierzynski is not employed by any team. Or Reggie Miller doing a game is not employed by any team. Tony Romo is not employed by any team. So they can say things that, well, they're not getting a paycheck.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It doesn't mean that I have to say certain things. The Texas Rangers demand I say certain things. Just like we're home of the Cowboys and the Rangers. It doesn't, Spittle, our boss, doesn't demand that we say certain things. But there are parameters with a relationship with a team. So if you're like, you should be more like AJ Pierzynski. I'm just giving him for an example because he does the national games on Fox. I can't. AJ can be very critical of Bruce Bochy or a pitch by John Gray, I'm going to try to be critical, but I'm also not going to just say that was stupid. I can't do that unless I don't want my job.
Yeah. So you can't call somebody a fart head for making an error.
Right.
Yeah.
So. And on radio, I do have to watch that, but sometimes, like last night, watching the game as a fan, I'm not employed by the Dallas Mavericks. Klay Thompson hit some big shots that I was pumped about. I was like, yeah, we're going to win this game. And then he threw the ball 13 feet over PJ Washington's head with 30 seconds to go. And I was like, dang it, Klay. What the crap was that? We gave you the ball to get fouled so you could make your two free throws to ice it, not wing the ball into the second row. I'm a fan. But if I'm employed by the Dallas Mavericks, Devin Harris can't say that. All he can say is, oh, that's a big turnover. This gives New Orleans a chance to possibly come back in this game. He can't say, that was a stupid pass.
We
all know it was a stupid pass. We can't say that as employed by the team.
What I think we're really going to start doing, Mike, on certain games is Corey, Alec, and I will create alternate commentary the next day for what we think
Mike should have said.
Yes. In my head,
what's in Mike's mind?
I'm thinking throwing the ball up like it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar jumping at first base.
Yeah. Sometimes me and David Murphy, whichever one's doing the game or you know somebody else, we might text each other our thoughts on that situation.
Yes.
But we don't say those thoughts in that situation.
Look at Altuve having a competition with Bryce Young for being the shortest athlete ever.
Don't you think that happens in interviews we have sometimes? Like, I am now with hand gestures and stuff very familiar with where the camera is.
Uh-huh.
And there's plenty of times that I'll just, let Corey know what I think about the job that he's doing. Or we'll talk to each other during interviews and somebody will say something. You look at the other person like, what the hell? What?
I will stand by this. I was told this by somebody who really liked you being on the broadcast. This is Adrian's aunt. She said that she likes stories of guys' careers, but she really wants the focus on the game. And when you give information about why somebody did something, our listeners have told us they like baseball more. They know more baseball because of listening to you.
And see, what's tough is for Elvis joining the pre and post and for Murph is they had good careers.
Yeah, they did. Yes.
They have a lot of positive things that they can go to in certain situations and say, I played in a World Series. I played in a playoff game. I faced the best. I can say I barely faced the best. Every time I did, they sent me back to AAA.
But listen to Brady. Brady had a great career and doesn't always go to his. He talks about, hey, in this situation right now, 20 yards to the end zone. So I think that's a really good approach to it.
And
but
then
you'll be fine.
Thank you. And then for Jared Sandler, I think this is going to be awesome. There's going to be traditional aspects of the pre and post game show, interviewing the player of the game, interviewing the manager before the game. But we are going to try to be very creative in the pregame and postgame, and you'll hear it here on 105.3 The Fan. We obviously, there's going to be a nuance to this, which is going to be really cool but challenging. We're going to be on television while also knowing in the back of our head, the video that is on TV is not being seen on 105.3 The Fan.
Yeah.
So we are going to have to be descriptive in this, because we're also making sure that the radio listener in their, we just think of the person in their car driving to go get their kid or take their kid to a practice or whatever it is, listening to the pregame show, isn't watching the pregame show while we have other people watching. But I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it. And Jared Sandler, to me, is a genius.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I agree.
And he's got a tremendous work ethic.
It's going to be really fun.
He might have picked wrong with Blake Lively, but I hear you on the rest of it. I just noticed that Mike Bassett is already sporting the Rangers.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Sporting I didn't even Network. Notice that.
Rangers Sports Network, yeah.
That looks awesome.
I like it. All right, the Cowboys, and we'll talk plenty more about that as we go along in the days and the weeks. The Cowboys making some moves as well and then saying the things that so frequently agitate people like me. Cowboys hiring Aaron Whitecotton as their defensive line coach and Dave Borgonzi as the defensive passing game coordinator. And so I wanted to throw that out there. And yes, I did almost trip up on Borgonzi. He's going to be the linebackers coach, excuse me. And the defensive game passing coordinator is going to be Andre Curtis. So filling out the staff quickly for our new coach, Shoddy.
I'm very interested to, and we'll get this opportunity in late July to see. But how quickly these guys can get work done. Yeah. Because otherwise it might be another year of growing pains with coaches having to learn the players and all those things. Because Mike's been talking about this for a long time. They don't practice enough. So I feel like the cycle of getting prepared for it, Cowboys look like they got caught off guard by the whole season this year.
Yep.
And so I hope that that's not necessarily the case. And Schottenheimer just lived through it. So he's got to figure out a plan immediately to make sure they're ready for G1.
Well, Corey,
game one.
Corey. I understood. I might need you to plug your ears and say la 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 for this next part.
Because, like on air?
I mean, that's
la,
up to
la,
you.
La 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 la.
Maybe off air. Right. Because Stephen Jones was asked about Micah Parsons, and of course he throws out the, I don't think anyone's ever underestimated Micah's value to the team, what he can bring, blah 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 blah, and then we get down to like essentially the contract at the very end. I don't want to get into the details of early, late, when all that comes. It's too early for any of that. But obviously, Mike is an important part of what we're about. All right. But it's not too early for that. Like, what are you even saying? You could have, and maybe I'm just misreading this. And if that's the case, my apologies. You could have re-signed Micah last year. Now, I understand. Takes two to tango. Got to have him and his agent on board. But
I feel like he would have done it, though.
Maybe so. Like especially since he's already talking about, I'd be comfortable at 35 as opposed to 40. But when Steven says early, late, whenever that all comes, it's too early for all that. How? How is it too early for that? In what universe is it too early to figure out the contractual details of probably your best player? Or at worst, your second best player?
So that it can start helping you get those details for your next players.
Okay, and that's a great point, because you know what the Cowboys are going to say? I can see it, and not because I have ESP or anything, just because I've heard it a million times. Micah's rookie hit for the option year, I think it's like $24 million, give or take. We did the comparison with Chris Jones. You could probably get that number down, I think, in terms of cap hit, to $10 to $12 million this year. But what I'm really afraid of is that $12 to $14 million. That's a big chunk of money that you could go get a starter. Maybe a really, really good starter. And instead, we're going to sit there, do nothing, and then get to camp and be like, we did it. Mm-hmm. Right, what are you going to do with that money? Well, you know, we are paying CD and Dak. And
you need $14 million just to make it through camp.
Yeah, and I'm just going to slam my head against the table and be like, that's not how this is supposed to work if you're actually trying to be high-level competitive. But if you're just trying to be regular competitive where people don't forget about you, then that's why this works just fine.
Not that Jerry would listen to me, and he shouldn't, but the way that he became successful, one, Jimmy Johnson. But two, they came up with a chart that nobody had on tracking, hey, how much is a draft pick worth?
Yep.
And that was the innovative way that Dallas got ahead of everybody for a short period of time. And it led to, there's multiple things that led to it, but one of those things was that led to your dynasty. And you go back in time to the way the Cowboys were using computers before people were using computers, and that's Gil Brandt, and that's Tom Landry, and all that stuff is like, Jerry, what you're doing the same thing for multiple decades now.
For a team with a history of innovation.
That's never won.
Yeah.
It's never won for anybody. The way you win is to go outside of the box and do something that nobody else has thought about. And then you try it and see, could this lead us to doing something that everybody's going to copy 2 to 4 years from now,
yeah,
because we beat everybody to this. And he never thinks that way anymore. And Steven doesn't seem to ever even consider thinking like that.
Yeah, I got Corey and y'all granted me plenty of space yesterday to rant and throw out my numbers, beautiful mind style, about the cap. So I'm not going to get into that today. I just fundamentally do not like the way that they do this.
You were passionate. I loved it.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, the Mavs win a shootout. And what about the idea of those 10-minute quarters? All of it next, right here on The Fan.
13 made threes, that is, Dallas this year. And they've got 15 in this game, maybe 16! They got it! Klay Thompson!
Hey, for Zach and Frisco, you're right.
We finally
corporate
got him.
America has torn me down and also forced me to say the big game,
uh-huh,
because that was a commercial. In all seriousness, if you want to help Underdog keep rocking at this station, I'd really appreciate it if you would sign up and use the promo code Masterpiece. But we're not in a commercial now, so we could say Super Bowl, except of course for the fact that this segment is about basketball. All right, I want to talk about the Mavs. I want to talk about the Mavs winning. But real quick, did you? What were the emotions y'all had in the last 50 seconds? Because it didn't feel like statistically possible that we could lose that game once you're up by 10. But in the last 49, 50 seconds, I can't remember exactly when the three went in, you got outscored 11-2. And it was like, what the hell's happening?
I had the same feeling as I had whenever PJ Washington was dribbling up court and then turned around and had an offensive foul on him. Like, I was like, what is happening here? How did that happen? How did you lose the ball so many times in the first half? I felt like all the work they did in that second half was for nothing.
Okay.
After what they went through in the first half, I was like, no, it's going to happen. But then it didn't happen. It worked out.
So the question is, when did I think that they could lose this game?
Yeah, because it went into and it was neck and neck for most of the second half until you kind of break into later in the fourth quarter. The Mavericks start to extend a lead, and then they get up by 10 multiple times. And then the last 50 seconds are madness.
When Klay threw the ball out of bounds up by 6, because I thought Dinwiddie and PJ Washington, I'm sorry, I can't remember who did it, but there was a couple passes to get the ball to Klay Thompson with 32 seconds to go, a 90% free throw shooter for his career, to go, let's get the ball to our best free throw shooter. I'm not saying be selfish, but they did a good job of getting the ball to the guy that New Orleans didn't want to foul. And I get it. Klay Thompson is older. He's not as fast as he used to be. He's not as strong as he used to be. He doesn't have the same confidence with the ball in his hands in that situation he used to have. Because before, it'd be like, yes, I can pass it to Steph Curry, and we both make almost every free throw we ever take. But he would be strong with the ball in that situation and take the foul and make sure he didn't lose the ball and sink the free throws. But instead, he jumped in the air like a ninth grader and wing the ball.
Or Josh Green.
Yeah, or Josh Green, who did that a million times in his career so far. I was like, oh no, they just gave him a chance, because it was just a turnover and there's still 30 seconds to go. I believe it was a 6-point game, and then they sink a 3-pointer off of, I think, multiple offensive rebounds, which that wasn't good. And I'm like, crap. And then Dinwiddie gets fouled and misses the first free throw. That's when I was like, they're going to go to overtime and lose this game.
And it was odd, too, because
luckily he made the second.
The offensive rebound, or the rebounding in general, was pretty dang good for the Mavericks yesterday.
Yeah.
They played a great game, except for the end of the half. Like, the going into halftime, they were horrible. I think it was a 16-2 run or something like that.
And they had 12 turnovers in the first half.
Yeah.
So like that was,
wow.
That was 12 turnovers in the first half to 5. So that was the thing that shot them in the foot most of the night.
But they made some great shots. They made some great plays. Kessler Edwards had a big block when I was like, why the crap is he in this game right now? Like, you got to be kidding me, Jason. But he did have a big block on somebody late in the game for a big defensive possession. I was like, that's why Jason Kidd's the coach and I'm not.
Now, the person that a lot of this goes back to, and I saw, I believe it was Corey, you and Alec were going back and forth talking about how this is just common sense.
Just now, call this play.
Is the Mavs are undefeated when PJ Washington puts up 20 points and 12 plus rebounds. 5-0.
He's our new Josh Howard.
Yeah, Josh Howard.
But the other thing that Alec brought up is they're over the league average in scoring in those games by about 13 points.
There you go.
And so when PJ is on, and I know it's just five games, but when PJ is on, the offense is really clicking. Alec, do I have that right? It's about 126 to 113, give or take?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty stark difference. And my favorite fact about those games is two of those were against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Nice.
So that just further proves the point that he has their number. But yeah, they do really good whenever he's really active on both ends of the floor. It seems like they're putting up a lot of points, and that makes a lot of sense because what did you see a lot of last night? Corner three, you know, and running the defensive boards, getting second chance opportunities. That is a big key for PJ Washington. When he's doing those things, it just seems to free up everybody else to a bigger extent, and you win these tighter games and you score a lot more points.
So this is the weird thing to me that I love about PJ Washington. PJ Washington and Zion are about the same height.
Okay.
But don't you think of like Zion as a much more like interior presence who's much more likely to get the rebound? But that's never been the case throughout his career. Even this year, he's doing significantly better than he had before. They also have the exact same rebounding average this year. And so whenever you talk about what PJ Washington brings to this team, and I know we talk defense, and I appreciate that, but man, oh man, his level of desire to get involved and be active in the rebounding game is off the freaking charts for his size.
He's done great. PJ Washington, right now, you're surviving this season based off of Daniel Gafford, PJ Washington, and I'm going to give a lot of credit to Kyrie Irving. Probably the most to Kyrie, right? Because he stayed, besides the back thing, which does worry me the rest of the season, he has stayed pretty darn healthy, and he's leading this team to the 26 victories this year. And Daniel Gafford now having to play over 30 minutes. And I know I won't say an all-star because when you look at the center position in the West, you have Wimby and you have Jokic.
Yeah.
So good luck ever being an all-star in the Western Conference the rest of your life if you're 7 feet tall. And it's a worthless game anyways. So Daniel Gafford is playing like an all-star.
Yeah.
I get that he won't ever make an all-star team, but what he's doing is tremendous. And then PJ Washington is just like the ultimate role player. And you do have, I think...
I agree.
You have a situation where you've traded for these two guys. They're major contributors to your team, not star players, but major contributors that are making $15 to $11 million or $12 million.
Like, price.
They're under $30 million combined.
Yeah, it almost feels like a steal.
And they're going to both make $30 million a year in a couple years from now. When they become free agents, those guys in today's NBA are $30 million players. So they are just doing a great job while you just are rolling out players that you're like, oh, please.
And that's why you needed to win that game.
And the thing is,
yeah, it's a great win.
The thing about it, when Luka's on the court, PJ he willingly takes that step back into his role. He knows, I got to go be the Swiss Army knife defender. But hey, if a game is going in a way that I need to step up and be part of it, I'm ready. I'm ready for that corner three if Luka passes it over to me. That's the kind of player that you need to be your fourth, fifth, wherever number you want to put him.
Okay, so now I'm going to throw this to you, Kevin, because you're a Duke guy.
Yep.
Watching last night's game, and I know it's just one game and he's barely ever healthy, but he was last night. Would you risk trading for Zion?
Okay, so yeah,
he's still.
I'm glad that you brought that up. But the part of the conversation that I want to talk about is,
okay,
tell me why. I don't mean this in a sarcastic, like that's a stupid idea. I'm serious. Tell me why you want to trade for Zion, because two of the deficiencies that he has, at least for his size, Rebounding, although he has rebounded significantly better this year, he's not a great rebounder and or defender, obviously. So tell me why that is appealing.
Great question.
That is a really
good this is a potential situation. One, potentially, I have to believe he's going to care a lot more and he's going to stay healthy a lot more. That's the scary part about trading for Zion, which I don't think he's going to be on the Pelicans to start next year. I don't know if he's going to get traded in the next 7 days.
Sure.
But I don't think he's going to be a Pelican after this season. Is I look at him and go, he's in a crap organization. They've competed for nothing. And a lot of it is his fault because he won't stay healthy. Agreed. Or care enough. So
it kind of feels like Embiid just a little bit to me. I know Embiid has had a far better career, but that's what it kind of reminds me of just a little bit.
I do think the Mavs have a much better organization than the Pelicans. If I got him on a team with Jason Kidd as the coach, a team that's been to the NBA Finals, the conference finals recently, would he care so much that he could become a face of the league if he stays healthy on the Dallas Mavericks, going to multiple finals with Luka and Kai, and they become this three-headed monster with some really good role players around him? So it's a potential.
That's kind of the vision there, too.
Scary deal to trade for him.
And the other thing, I will tell you, and we went over this, I don't know, like a month ago or whatever, the guaranteed part of his contract is more limited because of all the time that he's already missed. So that helps push me in that direction. I still, to this day, think he has the potential to be one of the faces of the league, but he'll be one-dimensional offensive face of the league. Because somebody texted this in, well, Zion's missed a whole lot of games or else he would have more rebounds. I don't think that's accurate, at least from an average standpoint. Right. More rebounds in total, sure. I was just saying from an average standpoint, PJ Washington, 8.2 per game. Zion, 8.2 per game. Zion has only played in 12-ish games this year. 13. He's played in 13 games this year. His number is way over his career average. So I would actually make the argument, the more games Zion's going to play, the lower his rebounding is going to get.
You're thinking he takes away from PJ? I mean, it might even cost you PJ.
And that's my question is...
What does it cost you?
Exactly. And last year, everybody... Well, let's try that again. Most of the people we talked to, you remember, YouTube, social media, Fantext, Twitch, Daniel Gafford, and PJ Washington. Who gives an S? They fit so well on this team. Yes. Zion is just as talented. Actually, in terms of pure athleticism and talent, he might be as talented as both of them combined. But right. I don't see the great fit on this team.
Yeah, because with Luka and Kai, you needed length and athleticism. You needed to add that around them to make them a better defensive team.
And Zion's not as big as people think.
Right, 6'5", 6'6".
Yeah, and I know people joke about with the weight and everything, and that is true. He's just not as physically big height-wise as people seem to think.
And I'm not really pushing for this.
No, I hear you.
I am not going to trade them PJ Washington. I'm not going to trade them Daniel Gafford. I'm not going to trade them Derek Lively. I'm trading them two first-round picks, and I'm trading them Prosper, and I'm trading them Hardy. So I'm giving you two young prospects. I'm giving you two first-round picks, and now I need to make the money work with, let's just say, I got to put Maxey in there. Yep. I know they don't care at all about him, but that gives me 11. I've added the two young guys. Now I got to get another Quentin Grimes in there to get the money up a little bit. And I do like Quentin Grimes. I'm not trying to get rid of him, but I would only do it if I'm adding to this core without really losing anything that I think can win me a championship in the next couple of years.
For the people that are worried that after this season, he's still under contract for three more years, that is true. But remember, that is not a fully guaranteed, like many NBA contracts, there was actually something in there that triggered that contract no longer being fully guaranteed. And so each successive year is based on how much he played or how much he weighed the year before. I'm not joking about that. That's really the way it is.
And maybe this isn't a great finishing lineup as we're getting close to baseball nuggets, but if you had Zion and you didn't trade anything away, I know this is a weird lineup, but if you had Luka, Kai, PJ Washington, Zion, and Gafford, because I can't put Lively out there yet, but let's just Lively or Gafford if they're both healthy. That can be a pretty darn dangerous lineup. It's not a great 3-point shooting team. I will say that.
He doesn't shoot threes.
But, and PJ's an inconsistent shooter. Yeah. But you give me PJ Washington, Zion, and our center, along with Luka,
I get you.
That's the strongest NBA team in the game today.
Offensively.
I'm talking physically, too.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Zion, PJ, Luka, and one of our centers, like Gafford, teams are like, dang, they are physical. To your point, there has to be a commitment to defense. Because I do think they all have the ability. I think Zion and Luka have the ability different, but to be decent defenders, it's about their want to be.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we're going to trick up baseball nuggets and talk with senior baseball writer for The Athletic. It's Keith Law next on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Hoping to talk with Keith Law, senior writer for The Athletic, in just a minute. But it is still, whether we talk with Keith now or in a minute, time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassett.
All right, I want to get to first base. The top 10 first basemen, right? Did he just call in?
No. I'm a child. And so I'm a teenager when you said you wanted to get to first base. And,
And I was just trying to tell you how.
I thought like you looked at me like Keith Law.
No. Maybe.
I see Alec on the phone. And if I can do this later, but Nathaniel Lowe is ranked the 9th first baseman in baseball right now.
Okay.
So he made the top 10 list. Jake Berger didn't, but Jake Berger might have not even really been considered a first baseman. I know what they did with Mookie Betts. Threw him at shortstop already, but maybe they're like, look, we're not going to throw Jake Berger at first yet and put him into that category.
Does Nathaniel Lowe, Nate Lowe, get less appreciation for being top 10 at his position than like any other Rangers player? I feel like are like, he's fine.
Yeah, he's a first baseman is what a lot of people felt around here.
So I wanted to compare the two because I guess Keith Law, we can ask him about Jake Berger because I don't think he was a huge fan of this move for the Texas Rangers. He's a huge fan of Walcott. I don't think he's a huge fan of Berger being the everyday first baseman with the Rangers and being successful. Jake Berger, Nathaniel Lowe, we've got to talk to both of them. Both awesome guys. Yeah. Good people. I wanted to put their kind of stat head on Baseball Reference comparable and just know what you're getting from Jake Berger and what you're going to be losing from Nathaniel Lowe.
Okay.
What you're going to be losing the most at first base is last year, in approximately the same amount of games, 137 games for Berger, 140 games for Lowe, Nathaniel Lowe walked 71 times. He does have a good eye at the plate.
Yeah.
Jake Berger walked 31 times.
Ooh.
That is a big difference. And you're going to see the big difference here. Batting average is a difference, but not huge. 250 for Berger, 265 for Nathaniel Lowe. So he walks more and he has a better batting average. And you'll see this in the on-base percentage is only 301 for Berger, which is low.
Yeah,
that is below average. 361 for Nathaniel Lowe. That's above average for major league standards. But here's where the Rangers are saying we're going to make up for where we're losing the on-base percentage and the walks. We are going to make up for it in power. Last year, Jake Berger had 29 home runs and 23 doubles. Last year, Nathaniel Lowe had 16 doubles and 16 home runs. He had one triple, so he had 33 extra base hits.
Wow.
So this comes in to your slugging percentage.
He is good to go for whatever it's worth, Mike.
And Keith Law?
Yeah.
Let's go.
We welcome on to the program from The Athletic senior baseball writer, Keith Law. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing very well. Now, we were just kind of doing a breakdown of what the Rangers had with Nathaniel Lowe versus Jake Berger coming in. And I want to talk to you a lot about the prospect rankings coming up, but I'm just curious your general thoughts for the Rangers in terms of departure of Jake Lowe. And then here comes Jake Berger. Sorry.
Yeah, not a huge fan. I think Berger is a really limited player. It's real power, and that's kind of it. He can't play third. We'll see at first. He might be a DH in the end, and it's chronically low on base percentages, and I just think that is fundamentally who he is as a player. He missed a lot of developmental time. He missed 2 years with serious knee injuries, and I think that really set back his pitch recognition, his ball strike recognition, and then he kind of got to the majors almost because he was old enough to play in the majors and obviously had the power to play in the majors. But it kind of stunted his development as a hitter. So I think it's a bit of a downgrade. It's cheaper, obviously, but I think they are a little bit worse off for having him versus having Nathaniel Lowe, who Rangers fans, my sense is they never really seem to appreciate Lowe.
Yes, like, we were just talking about that. Totally.
Yeah. I don't know why. He's a perfectly good player. He's not a star. You know, if you get a star at some point, we're going to talk about some future stars, I guess. But for now, like, he was a perfectly good player. It was a great trade that I would say really worked out for the Rangers.
Well, what about the addition, though, of Jack Peterson? How do you feel about that one? Was that a good addition for them?
It does make me wonder, like, something's up with, like, I don't know if they're really worried about Evan Carter's back, which would be fair. I don't have a lot of information, but I mean, Peterson's a good platoon player, like a really good platoon player, about the best example of that type of player. You don't let him face a lefty, but if you've got a righty starter, or if you need a pinch hitter against a right-handed reliever, he is your guy, and he has been very consistent in that for several years now, where he's basically an all-star if the pitcher is right-handed, and he shouldn't play if the pitcher is left-handed. That is a good, useful player. Do they worry about Carter's back? Are they going to trade Leody Taveras? Do they just think Adolis Garcia is, like, what we saw last year is a sign that it's over and he's on his way out? Like, somewhere, something there didn't quite add up to me. And I honestly, if we talked at the time, I'd say there's another thing coming. Something is happening, another trade, something is going to happen really soon, but it hasn't. So I still don't really know. Good player, weird fit, but I'm assuming there's something else we don't know that makes them think, no, we need Jock Peterson.
All right, so let's go to, because we want to hear about your prospect rankings, Keith.
Yeah, absolutely. And I specifically want to start with Walcott if we can, because we all love your work, and that's why we wanted to go with you. And everybody has Sebastian Walcott, you know, like 20, give or take, whatever. And you specifically mentioned in your capsule, he is underrated. For people who haven't read the article, please go do. You can check him out at The Athletic. But for people who haven't seen it yet, can you kind of give an idea of why you think he's underrated?
I'm not entirely sure, other than maybe he, you know, maybe people don't realize just what he did, how young he was for his level. He was 18 in high A last year, one of only two players anywhere in the minors, three players in all of the minors to do that. And after a slow start, he started raking there, and they moved him up to double A, and he continued to perform. He outperformed the other two 18-year-olds who were starting at those advanced levels. And he's barely begun to scratch the surface of who he can be as a player. Like, when I talk to people inside the industry, it's pretty consistent. Like, no, Walcott's a superstar. Like, originally when I started sending out iterations of this list, I didn't have the top 10 ranked. I just kind of had them in groups and tiers. And everyone said, oh, no, move Walcott up. Like, shouldn't Walcott be 1, 2, 3? Like, if I don't know who's got him at 20, I'm not criticizing anyone else's list. But I think that where I have him is very much in line with where major league front offices have him. They see an absolute superstar who's going to get to the majors probably when he's 20. I mean, he could even get there when he's still 19. And it's power. It's probably going to be good defense at third. If he has to go to the outfield, it'll be good defense there. It's an advanced approach. It's great makeup. Like, what does he not do that would make you question putting him? Let's say, look, someone has him 5 instead of 2. I'm not going to argue that. But he's clearly one of the very, very best prospects in baseball.
Yeah, and I don't mean to skip over Kamar Rocker, but we feel like people know his backstory a lot better. Yeah. What I was curious about, that people don't know Alejandro Rosario as much. What was your insight for him? Because obviously he's really been moving up.
Yeah, that one I understand, because if you had seen him or knew anything about him coming out of the draft in 2023, you would have said, you know, it's a reliever. He stunk in college. I think he had like a 6 ERA in his draft year at Miami. And it seemed like an odd pick. But the Rangers almost immediately changed, more than anything else, they changed his pitch mix to better suit his arm action, honestly. And the results were almost immediate. And he was able to, and they tweaked the arm action a little bit. And that's a great job by scouting and by player development to work together and say, no, we see things in this guy that other people aren't going to see. And that is what traditional scouting is about. Once you get out of the first round, the good ones are usually taken by that. And so we're much more talking about guys who are going to need some kind of work, some kind of development help. And so in the case of Rosario, they made some changes and he really took to them immediately, to the point where they started him in low A, and they kind of had to move him up because he was too good for the level. And the result is, I think you've got, at worst, you've got a fourth starter, and you've got a really good chance for something more.
Okay, so when it comes to Walcott, what makes him not a shortstop at the major league level? I got to see him last year at 17 in spring training and loved what I saw, but I saw him the other day at FanFest. He's a huge guy and huge hands. But I look at so many guys now in the league that are bigger shortstops, and I just wonder, gosh, Corey Seager, probably a couple of years from now, do you think he's a first baseman, which would open up that position?
I mean, the issue with Walcott, it's all size. I don't think it's a makeup question. I think his hands are good. His hands are very big, right? So he's certainly going to be able to get the ball. It's how, as he fills out physically, you could show a movie on that guy's back. He is huge, and he is going to be 240. Like, he would be one of the biggest shortstops in history. And just, you know, Seager has bucked the odds by staying at short as long as he has. I do think Seager's going to have to move off short, but I think Walcott is too, because Walcott is so much bigger now than even Seager was at 18 or Correa was at 18. The other big shortstops we've seen in recent years, they were tall, but they weren't as broad. And Walcott is going to get so big and so strong just based on what he looks like already at age 18 that I think it's inevitable he moves off the position, because he's just not going to have the lateral range or agility to be the kind of above average to plus defender that a contending team wants at that position.
All right, love it. That's a great answer. Now, my other one is, when you're doing these rankings, a guy like Rocker, who was awesome in a short amount of time last year in the minor leagues and then showed that he could be successful at the major leagues, how much do you knock a guy for their age? Where you're like looking at an 18, 19-year-old, probably 2-3 years away from ever competing at a major league level, versus Rocker, who looks like this year is probably going to get 100 innings or so at the major league level.
So for position players, it's huge. And for pitchers, it doesn't matter a ton, because with pitchers, there's almost a disadvantage to being too young because they get hurt at such high rates, and teams have not figured out, or they kind of know and they're just ignoring the factors that increase a pitcher's risk of injury. Now, Rocker is a little different because obviously he's already been hurt, and before the Rangers drafted him, there were concerns about what might be going on in his elbow and his shoulder. So the fact that he's kind of on the other side of Tommy John and came back and his stuff was, I actually think, better than ever, certainly better than it was right before the Rangers drafted him, and that he looks like he can, I mean, he showed a little bit, he can pitch in the majors right now, is why I put him where I put him on the list, even though he might be the second oldest guy on there. River Ryan, also a pitcher, I think is the oldest guy in the top 100. Both of those guys have two things in common. They're ready for the majors, or Ryan will be when he comes off the injured list. And they have now stuck. They are going to pitch towards the top of a rotation. And that's what I see with Rocker. I don't know how long he's going to last. I hope he gets 5-6 years as a good major league starter. He might get less than that, but I know his stuff right now is going to get major league hitters out. And there's a lot of value in a guy who can come pitch at a high level today, even versus saying he can do that a year from now.
Talk with Keith Law right here on 105.3 The Fan for The Athletic. One thing I did really want to ask you about, because I found your answer very interesting, your ballot for the Hall of Fame. And one of the things you talked about is, like, CC Sabathia is a Hall of Famer. Like, he just is a Hall of Famer. But you added, again, in your article on The Athletic, his reputation around the game as a clubhouse leader, and then his voice and stature after his playing career to speak out about racial inequities in the game. And I wanted to know more about that. Is that something that you think factors in for a lot of writers when they're determining, like, maybe if it's a fine line between Hall of Fame or not Hall of Fame? Like, how much do they take into account those other circumstances?
Every voter, every writer who votes approaches it differently. Some guys don't want to consider that stuff at all. Some guys consider it extremely heavily. To me, my process is always what they did on the field is first. And that becomes, you know, you sort of have three groups: the guys who are no doubt Hall of Famers, the guys who are no doubt not Hall of Famers, and the guys where you're kind of on the bubble. And Sabathia was one of those guys for me, where I pointed out Sabathia and Andy Pettitte have pretty similar career numbers, kind of any way you look at it. So what's the separator? Well, a big separator is the character. And Sabathia gets extremely high marks for his character from people who played with him, from people who played against him, and from what we were able to see on the public side during and after his career. Whereas Pettit's makeup, he was connected to PEDs and, you know, obviously tied to Roger Clemens, who obviously had huge PED issues and other scandals of his own. So to me, that is a part of why I was able to separate those two, or willing to separate those two, and go yes on Sabathia and remain a no on Pettit. Not everyone thinks that way. You know, there's a character clause in the Hall of Fame voting guidelines, but there are no requirements to use it. And I think it's something we need to use judiciously, because I've pointed out in the past, the character clause historically has been used against players of color. It's very, and you still hear some of this in baseball, where black players are more likely to be called lazy, or for people to question their baseball IQ or their instincts. And we use the same words to praise white players of lesser ability. So I've always been wary of overusing the character clause, because you can use it for the wrong reasons. In Sabathia's case, I thought the case for his character was overwhelming.
The only thing I disagree with you, Keith, about CeCe being a teammate of his is he was a Laker fan and a Warrior fan, and I thought that was wrong as a fan of sports.
No, you can't do that. I agree.
You got to choose your team, CeCe.
Yeah, no, that's like extreme front running there. That is, if I'd known that, I might change my ballot.
Man, thank you very much for all the incisive information. You can check out all the stuff on The Athletic. It is Keith Law. Thank you very much for the time this morning, good sir.
Pleasure.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. That went so well. Let's have another guest coming up next. Former Cowboys running back, College Football Hall of Famer, now East-West Shrine Hall of Famer, Eddie George, next on The Fan.